It's the 25th episode of the Femme Fatale, and welcome to it for the 25th time. Since changing our name and going independent, I will be taking your questions about what's really going on in Hollywood. Digging deeper than the average entertainment blog, deeper than your typical gossip mag, certainly delivering more information about Hollywood than anything you ever see on an award show telecast. Oh, wait, let me take that back. I did learn a few things watching the Emmys on Sunday. I learned that Don Cheadle's the guy you whip out when things need to get serious in here. I learned that the mermaid silhouette is back in fashion. Somebody must have really pissed off God for that to happen. Thanks. And I learned that Stephen Colbert has about 16 white male writers and one female. How diverse! But mostly award shows tend to leave me like with more questions than answers. Like, I saw Zooey Deschanel presenting an award and suddenly wondered if Molly is half as fun as it looks. Luckily, for all of your questions about the entertainment industry, there's me, the Femme Fatale. You simply send me your questions via email, via Twitter, via Facebook, by my website, and wonder no more about movies, TV, music, video games, whatever. This week we've got so much education you may end up with an honorary doctorate by the time our half hour is up. I have got Pete the Retailer from Nerd Geek Dork. Say hello.
Hello.
And I've got Alex Robinson from Ink Panther. Say hello.
Hi, everyone.
Hello. And together they form something that's greater than the sum of its parts, the Star Wars Minute Podcast.
Star Wars Minute.
Star Wars Minute. And if you guys, if you're my listeners have been wondering just what the new Star Wars movie is going to look like, nobody is keeping track of the rumors more closely than these two guys. And we're going to have a roundup soon enough. Listener Freddie B also wrote in with a question stemming from Zac Efron's recent big announcement, or at least his latest piece of gossip. We'll get to that shortly. And with a bonus blind item in the mix for those of you who have missed those. Now, before I get to my special treat this week, actually, I just want to ask you two guys. Is it true that you two watched the Emmys just for me? Is that right? Did I hear that right?
Well, I knew we were going to be on, so I was like, well, I know this seems like the kind of thing that we could be talking about. So I said, I better watch the Emmys and... we have to talk about them because I have to get something out of wasting that 2 hours of my life.
Do you want to vent now?
I just thought it was really kind of like, I was surprised at how somber it was. Like, death seemed to be the overall theme of
Corey
the show.
Corey Monteith is dead. There's no joy in that.
But I mean,
there's no glee in that.
Yeah, but most of the other Glee people are still alive, right? Shouldn't they be focusing on the positive part of that? Like...
Whew. See, I didn't get to watch the Emmys. It was my plan to, but then I didn't. But the part that I usually, you know, pay the most attention to is the in memoriam part. That's the thing I look forward to.
Why?
That's my favorite part of any awards ceremony.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Well, yeah, it's like a roundup.
Yeah.
I
also love seeing who gets applause and who is utterly forgotten and despised by the current Hollywood people.
Is there anybody that you think was robbed in the in memoriam department?
Well, that's the thing. I didn't even make it to the in memoriam because I was so like disgusted by it. The whole show was an in memoriam. They would stop every 10 minutes to talk about another dead person. And then they're like, oh, and then there's the 60s and JFK died. Now here's a somber song about JFK. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It was a little too morose for me. And I love the roll call of the damned. So.
See, I think that maybe you're not deserving of my special treat this week. Maybe I'll exclude you from my special treat because this special treat is a very big special treat. Now, as many of you know, this is the this past month marked the anniversary of one of the most pivotal moments in the history of the United States, the March on Washington, led, of course, by the late Dr. Martin Luther King, but also spearheaded and supported in very large part by a bevy of high-profile celebrities from the 60s. That era you seem to just have no respect for whatsoever. So, singer Harry Belafonte used his considerable clout to pull in huge names, ranging from Marlon Brando to Paul Newman to Charlton Heston to Sidney Poitier. Dead people. Heavy, heavy hitters. Why am I bringing this up? Because recently, Harry Belafonte was asked whether he thought the current crop of celebrities was doing enough to keep that flame, to pick up where our elders have left off in our struggle for equality in this country. And Belafonte told a reporter, and I quote, they have turned their back on social responsibility. That goes for Jay-Z and Beyonce, for example. close quote. Mm-hmm. Jay-Z being Jay-Z responded with the following quote, open quote, "This is going to sound arrogant, but my presence is charity. Just who I am, just like Obama's is. Obama provides hope, and whether he does anything, the hope that he provides for a nation and outside of America is enough." Close quote. Now, no comment. I personally have been wondering about this exchange for a while. I wanted to know whether Belafonte is the only civil rights organizer who feels this way, and I wanted to move the conversation forward, and I came up with a rare opportunity I couldn't pass up. I got to interview a woman who was there, right there with Dr. King during these seminal times in the 1960s. In fact, Dr. King was her mentor. I'm speaking of the distinguished former journalist and playwright, Janet Langhart Cohen. This woman is so cool. She's so badass. She grew up in public housing in segregated Indianapolis, was bitten by a rat when she was sleeping when she was a kid. That gives you a hint at the kind of upbringing she had to endure. Witnessed lynching and Klan rallies from her own front porch. And Dr. King, her mentor, denied her a place at the march itself in 63 because, as she described it at the time, she was too angry. She went on to be a reporter for Entertainment Tonight. And again, badass, got fired from that show for asking Arnold Schwarzenegger about his father's reported ties to Nazism. In other words, she's my hero. So I got the chance to speak to Janet Langhart Cohen about this back and forth going on right now between people like Belafonte and Jay-Z. And as it turns out, Belafonte is not the only civil rights pioneer who has a few questions for Jay-Z. So if you really want to know what a heroic celebrity, a risk-taking celebrity was, have a listen to this. Janet Langhart Cohen, thank you so much for doing this show.
Well, it's my pleasure, Leslie. Thank you.
Now, recently in the news, we obviously heard what the media is calling a quote-unquote feud. I don't know if I'd elevate it to that level, in which Harry Belafonte said that he thought maybe today's celebrities didn't have as much of a sense of responsibility when it comes to moving civil rights issues forward. Jay-Z responded, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he essentially said, "Me just being here is charity." Essentially, he said, yeah, just me being around offers hope in the same way that Barack Obama just breathing air offers hope.
The president is in a different realm as far as I'm concerned because he has the power to make decisions and policies. So to make the comparison, Jay-Z, to make that comparison to President Obama is probably not comparable, but since you brought it up, I don't know Jay-Z, and I don't know his music. Harry Belafonte, I've been in his company with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I've interviewed him when I was a journalist. I see him socially. So I have a bigger handle on his attitudes, activism, and objectives. Harry Belafonte, like Jay-Z, had a very successful music career as a calypso singer and actor, but he didn't let that get in the way of his taking risks. And back then, when Harry Belafonte was taking risks, it was a very difficult time. You talked about 50 years ago with the our commemorating that march 50 years ago, the March on Washington, Medgar Evers being murdered, the school bombing at the 16th Baptist Church. That was the 16th Street Baptist Church. That was the era that Harry Belafonte stood and took a stand. Harry Belafonte brought other celebrities, you're talking about celebrities today, other celebrities, his peers, into the movement. People like Charlton Heston, Paul Newman, Marlon Brando. He brought those other performers and actors to the movement and asked them to take a stand, not just with him, not just for black people, but for justice, for equality. And during that time of 1963, we were voting on the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. And Dr. King and others were very successful with Harry Belafonte's help in getting those passed. Now, fast forward to Jay-Z's generation or the young generation. I'm not putting this on Jay-Z. This generation, what has happened with those rights that men like Dr. King, Harry Belafonte, Medgar Evers, even Malcolm X, Stokely Carmichael, all fought for? I'll put Charlton Heston, Paul Newman, and Marlon Brando in that. They fought for those things, and they got them. And I've lived in Harry Belafonte's time and all of that, and knew Dr. King and knew the struggle, and we don't need to tell anybody that Dr. King gave his life for this. He died, okay? So to see these things rolled back in this time during their generation with the power that they have, with the influence and success that they've had, it's frustrating to see who is the carer of the banner, who is the keeper of the flame. I'm old enough to be Jay-Z's mother. If I were to say, if I had a chance to talk to him, I would ask him, not tell him, I would ask him, what do you think of the condition of the poor people? Let's not put a color on it. The poor people in this country. And since you are blessed to have success, do you feel a noble obligation? Do you feel a tithing, a mitzvah need to give back? You know, he's earned his money, and when you earn your money, nobody has a right to count it for you or tell you how to spend it. But I would just ask the question, do you feel a noble obligation? I wish if I had interviewed or could interview Jay-Z, I'd say, would you ask some of your musical colleagues to come out and stand with you, either on education, on health, on any number of things that enlighten and enable a better civilization, and certainly the betterment of the group that you come from? It's very, very frustrating, and I think you can probably hear the frustration in my own voice, that I would want, I expect to be worthy, to earn, to deserve the sacrifices of my parents, all the way back to Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, who went down and put a gun to the heads of those slaves and said, you're going to be free, let's go. Those people are the people that I hear the voices of, I hear their whispers. And when that comes out as a shout or an admonishment from a voice like Harry Belafonte to the younger generation, that we want them, what are you going to do about stop and frisk? What are you going to do about vigilante killing? What are you going to do about the mass incarceration of black men? What are you going to do about the unfair sentencing, that those who are arrested with powder get less time than those who have crack cocaine? And that's race. There's a lot to be done. There's a lot of frustration. And when you see how they got the civil rights movement, the Voting Rights Act, all of that, and then to see this generation not seemingly upset that it's being rolled back and not doing, they don't have to do anything brand new. Just do what Harry Belafonte and Dr. King's generation did. Because freedom is not free. One has to be ever, ever vigilant.
I can't thank you enough for doing this. Thank you so much.
Well, it's my pleasure.
And I'm back. If you want to know more about Janet Langhart Cohen, you should pick up her memoir. It's called From Rage to Reason. Or if you have the opportunity, see her play. It's called Anne and Emmett, about an imaginary meeting between Anne Frank and Emmett Till. And now it's time to geek out. I promised you all some Star Wars shenanigans, and we've got them. It's time for Alex and Peter to shine like the diamonds they are. Alex and Peter from Star Wars Minute, are you ready to step up?
I think so.
I could be ready.
I love the energy. If you haven't checked out this podcast, their Star Wars Minute, I have to say, it's perfect for anyone obsessed with the Star Wars universe. It analyzes the film literally minute by minute. Each episode of the podcast focuses on 60 seconds of that film. I have been an honored guest recently. Hi, guys.
Hey, we're glad we could be here on the show.
You know,
yeah, thanks
is
for
it,
having us.
Thank you. Now, was I the first person to point out to you that there were no room for boobs in the Star Wars, the Stormtrooper uniforms?
I think you were the first person and to date the only person who's pointed that out to us. So you still get sole credit for that one.
So we can now safely say that the Empire hated women.
Not sure if they hated them as much as they just didn't, they paid them no heed.
They didn't want them in protected, at least from damage when going out and assassinating people.
Right.
They were cannon fodder.
Exactly.
Yeah, they were the equivalent of the battle bots from the Clone Wars. They were just expendable. You just throw them in there and let them feel the cannon fire.
Yeah, now, or I guess they wanted to be. Go ahead,
or if they wanted to be uncomfortable, they could just squeeze into the armor somehow.
Yeah, sure. Take one for the team. Take one for Lord Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really so different than the uncomfortable things women have to do now to make be pretty? Seriously.
Yeah, there's a difference between being uncomfortable to be pretty and being uncomfortable to be alive.
That's true.
This is
true. Slight difference.
So how many times have you guys been asked what your favorite minute is?
You're asking what our favorite minute is or just how many times? Three
Both.
Times.
Both.
At least three times.
And what is it?
Oh, boy. My favorite minute is probably one of the early ones with the Jawas on the Sandcrawler. Because I like the Jawas. I like seeing a lot of cool droids and hearing alien languages and stuff. So I think that's among my favorite minutes. Although one thing I've learned doing this podcast is I'm like, every minute has something of some value in it.
See, whereas I'm the opposite of Alex. I think my favorite minutes tend to be towards the end, and especially the Y-wing pilots who try to blow up the Death Star but fail before Luke Skywalker can come in and kind of clean that up and actually blow up the Death Star. But the guys who try but fail, for some reason that interests me.
You like the failure. The movie should have just ended after they failed.
That would have made you happy.
It should have just followed them flying home, being like, I effed it up again. Can we curse on the program?
Sure you can. That would have been like the Louis C.K. preferred ending, like the sad, sad ending.
Right. Then they have to just kind of deal with them, oh, why didn't I do that?
Yeah.
How could I have not pulled that off?
Then it's just spent beating yourself up for another hour.
They had to have been kind of had mixed feelings when Luke pulled it off. They had to be kind of like, oh, great. That's great, Luke. I'm glad you did it. You know what I mean? Like, even though part of them was like, well, if the Yavin blew up, well, I tried, but now Luke pulled it off, so now they have to go back and be like, yeah, let's watch him get medals.
No, you know what it was like in the locker room afterwards. It's like, well, of course it's easy if you've got the Force.
Oh, yeah.
I could have done it if I'd had the Force.
Cheater.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I think my favorite minute has to be in the cantina, opening that cantina, and it felt, even though the room was full of aliens, I think it's one of the most human moments in the whole thing. It's basically the equivalent of the Western where the guys walk into the saloon with the doors swinging and the piano player stops playing. It's the same kind of feel.
Yeah, and there's that feeling of culture shock as well. Because up until that point, we haven't really seen, we've seen very few monsters and aliens. And now suddenly we're seeing 100 of them in one scene, one quick barrage.
And like humans, none of them are particularly friendly. You know, you get the feeling that these are not just, that's the other thing that I loved about that second of film is you walk in there and realize just because they're aliens doesn't mean they come in peace. Just because they're cute.
Those two guys do come up and try to make some conversation with Luke. They try to be friendly with them.
Uh-huh. It ends well, too.
That was a happy ending.
So, guys, I want to start with two questions that I've actually gotten from my readers that are right up your alley. Alex, why don't you read them aloud first, and then we'll get to we'll broaden it out afterward.
Okay. Should I just read the first one or read both of them?
Well, it depends. Do you guys need to share or you'll fight?
I'll let Alex do it.
All right.
Okay. Well, it says here, Caroline G. writes via Facebook, and Caroline says, the only recent rumor I've read was about Benedict Cumberbatch being the villain. I assume this is because of the J.J. Abrams connection. Cumberbatch was the villain in Abrams' latest Star Trek movie, and of course, Abrams is directing the new Star Wars. But what are the chances?
I love how you assign her a personality.
That's kind of... Caroline kind of has that kind of way. But I just read today about Benedict Cumberbatch being one of the rumored people. And it seems very like it's the kind of thing where he was supposed to be doing one movie and had to pull out of it. And therefore, everyone assumes that he's pulling out because he is now filming the Star Wars movie.
Well, there's also he's on record saying that he really likes Star Wars more than Star Trek. Which, if he gets to do both, why not? Like, if he had that opportunity, he would be a fool to not do it.
Do you how real do you think that rumor is?
I'll believe
I'll say 60%.
Really? And you?
Yes, 60 sounds good. I might even go a little bit higher. I might go 65, almost 70, because he does seem to be denying it in a way that, you know, he also denied things about the previous Star Trek movie that then ended up being true. So, I don't know. I think if you put the puzzle together, it makes sense. And I'll go as high as 70, almost 70. Let's say 68%.
Wow.
It's also tricky because it's not like Harry Potter where we have any idea of what characters are going to be in the movie. Like if they said Benedict Cumberbatch was going to play Jedi Master, what's his face, from the novels, then we could say, okay, was that plausible? But I don't think there's any information about what the story's about or anything, so anything could be possible, you know? And it's...
That's true. If they want to put Benedict Cumberbatch in the movie, they can just write a part for him, basically, because it's still at that stage.
That's true. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was the one, I was the one who broke the news first that this Star Wars movie is going to be, it's not going to be taken from the novels. At least that's what Lucasfilm told me. They told me that it's not going to be taken from the novels, that it's going to be, quote unquote, an original story. So you're right. They could be just making up a random Paul Treatham type character for him, or they could be making him into a little boxy robot on wheels and making him, you know, just giving him a voice to do.
Do you think it'd be the kind of thing where they have like 1,000 celebrity cameos in it because everyone wants to be in the new Star Wars movie? So they're going to have like, you know, oh, look, that the waitress is Carrie Underwood. And oh, look, that's the Gungam style guy playing the music in the background. You know what I mean? Like,
you know,
I'm getting nauseous even saying that.
I got to say something about that, though. I think it depends on how much Lucas is going to be involved, because Lucas really likes to find terrible unknown actors to play key parts. That's his shtick, is to do that. Not only that, if it's going to be about Luke and Leia's twins, or it's going to be about young people, then it becomes exponentially less likely that you're going to have somebody well-known, because by the time you start shooting, I mean, the person may not have even been freaking born yet at the rate that they're going.
Right.
The other two names I've seen associated as rumor, the other two keyed rumor people are, you're right, and they go to what you're talking about, are Michael B. Jordan, mm-hmm. who is somewhat known. He was on Friday Night Lights and The Wire and stuff, but he's not a, you know, marquee name at this point, and someone whose name I cannot pronounce.
That Saoirse Ronan.
Oh, Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah,
Saoirse Ronan. Yes. So you guys clearly know how to pronounce it. So,
well, because it sounds kind of like a Star Wars name already. So I was.
They don't even need to give her a Paul Treatham type name.
She'll be playing Jane Smith in the movie.
Now, how strong do you consider those rumors to be?
I like the Saoirse Ronan rumor because it fits a pattern.
What pattern is that?
The pattern is, remember with the prequels, you know, they cast Natalie Portman, who was a young New Yorker who had previously played a female assassin.
Mm.
And Saoirse Ronan is a young female New Yorker who had previously played an assassin.
So Lucas clearly has a type.
Exactly. This is all according to plan. There's just like a sheet that they have to check off some boxes.
Yeah, like I don't care if she can act. Is she a young New Yorker who once played in it? Done.
Yep. That's it. She's in the movie.
Now we're trying to think of other actresses who have played assassins in movies.
Chloe Grace Moretz.
Oh, there you go.
But she's not a New Yorker, I don't think. Now.
And Michael B. Jordan was in that Red Tails movie that George Lucas. Did he direct it or just produce it?
I thought he directed it.
So he was in that. So that seems to be although again, we don't know how much interaction Lucas is actually going to have with this movie. So yeah. Anything's possible.
And given that Disney is now in the mix, that studio is a massive, massive presence, and its hands are going to have to be all over it in subtle ways. They may have a lot to say about the casting that may be a totally different way of doing things.
Yeah, I mean, Lucas's kind of his strength was that since he was really the only one calling the shots, he could do kind of whatever he wanted, regardless of, you know, critical appraisal or what anyone else thought. But I feel like Disney, that's why I'm more like Disney's totally going to be like, okay, who's the next child star we're grooming? That's going to be the person who plays, you know, Luke's child. And who's this new singer who has a record to promote? She will play the you know, young love interest and stuff. So,
you know, I don't think they'll go that far, but, and they've said, Disney has said, oh, we're going to be pretty hands off about that, but you don't buy an asset like that and not get up in those people's faces. You just don't do it. I mean, if for my money, I wouldn't play it that way.
Yeah.
Now, Alex, there is another reader question. You assign her whatever personality you'd like.
Okay. Jen G asks via Facebook. Now I feel a lot of pressure to give her a crazy voice.
You can just read it, you know.
I'll just read it.
Okay.
Is it true Ben Affleck is going to play Han Solo?
Followed by three anxious question marks.
Yeah, and it was in all caps, too, so I guess I should have yelled it.
Yeah, you
so
should have shouted it.
Yeah.
She is emphatic about whether Ben Affleck is going to play Han Solo.
And your thoughts are?
My thoughts are no. Not because I don't think he could play Han Solo, but if the rumors are true about him playing the Batman, then he'll be tied up with that, and they're not going to want him in two franchises at the same time.
Plus, according to the rumors that I've heard, Han Solo is playing Han Solo. That Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill are all at least, if not contractually on board, they're willing to step on to do little cameos as their characters.
They're definitely locked in to do that?
They agreed that they will do it, but I don't think anyone is officially confirmed.
Although, I did hear a rumor. Well, I heard a rumor that that Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher both, signed something. They said, like, yeah, we'll do it. And they signed a contract or an agreement, at least. And then pretty much as soon as they signed the agreement, then Disney/Lucasfilm was like, great, we'll be sending personal trainers to your house tomorrow. And they're, like, step one is get into shape. And so that's for the next couple of months until they start shooting. The goal is just to get those guys into kind of movie form.
That's awful.
Poor Carrie Fisher.
I was going to say, they're like, they are sci-fi royalty. You don't step to Carrie Fisher.
Well, after they had her signature, then they can do it.
That's true. She should have seen that coming. She's from a Hollywood family.
Yeah, Luke could have used the Force to figure that one out, right?
So, what's the strongest rumor you've heard so far?
In terms of our preference or in terms of what we think will happen?
What you think will happen.
One of the things I saw was that, you know, they had their putting forth this idea of doing, I was going to say solo movies, but they're not all about Han Solo. Like, they do one movie about, it would be like a standalone movie with Yoda, and then they do a standalone movie with Han Solo, and then a standalone movie with Boba Fett. So basically every year there will be a new Star Wars movie coming out. There will be the numbered ones, and then there will be these kind of like spin-off one-shot things.
And kind of like the Wolverine.
Like Wolverine?
Well, yeah. And the Avengers too. Like the Avengers kind of. Picture reverse Avengers, where they do the Avengers first, and then they're like, and then now here's more adventures of these crazy characters.
And your thoughts on that are?
I could easily see it happening, and I kind of like it. I kind of like the idea of, well, scratch that, reverse it. I like the idea of them doing one-shot movies, like, you know, beginning, middle, and end, as opposed to a trilogy. Everything has to be a trilogy now, but I can't say I'm crazy about the idea of them wrecking Han Solo's character by showing him as a kid.
Yeah, I would like it more if it was one-shot movies based on, you know, characters that we haven't met yet. If we're making up new stuff and then giving us, you know, like, oh, in between, you know, maybe do episode 7 first and then be like, oh, all these characters that you just met, well, here's their story. And then give us a little background on each of those versus going back and kind of retreading that well-worn kind of Han Solo passage.
Yeah, but they can't do that because then if they had done that, after episode 1, they would have had to commit to a Jar Jar. You know what I mean? They would have done a Jar Jar movie. Who wants that? No one. No one. The one thing I thought was kind of cool was Joe Johnston, who directed the Captain America movie, expressed an interest in directing the Boba Fett movie. And I kind of like that because Joe Johnston helped design, and he was a special effects guy on Empire Strikes Back and helped design the Boba Fett costume. So at least be in the family, you know?
Yeah, aren't there those shots of him kind of wearing the test pressings of the Boba Fett armor?
Yeah, so that would be kind of cool.
That would be neat.
So, interesting that you say that. Wait a minute, you talk about the Mandalorian armor. Oh, the fact that I know that, I just whipped that out, and he's not even a Mandalorian, and I know that. You know, I'm okay with not knowing much more about Boba Fett. I think part of Boba Fett's appeal is his mystery. I don't think you need to blow everybody out. You know, we don't need to know everything about Jabba the Hutt. Instead, I like the way that in the Clone Wars we learned about other Hutts, like Zero the Hutt, Jabba's uncle, the Truman Capote of Hutts. I think that's fantastic. I kind of liked, maybe it'll be a little bit like the Clone Wars, where in a couple of movies, like you said, we'll focus on certain characters and others will focus on others. I like that.
I would really love for them to use A, more obscure characters, and B, get interesting directors to do those kind of weird one-off movies. You know, get Martin Scorsese to do the movie about the crime, you know, the world of the crime. You know, Martin Scorsese directed criminal underworld movie.
Now Hutta. Yeah, the exactly. Movie. Oh my God.
Yeah, or getting, you know, like even do
Tarantino could do that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even, you know, go more indie. Just, you know, pick up somebody, you know, it could be an easy way for somebody to just kind of have a sandbox to play in, you know, pick up somebody from, you know, Sundance or some, you know, some young kid who's got a movie in a festival and just be like, all right, well, you know, make up a story about this guy that, you know, this alien.
Yeah, I want to see Spike Jonze's Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll let them know.
Would you? That would be great.
Now it's time to move on. I did promise a blind item. Peter?
Yes?
Would you like to read the final reader question of the week?
Sure.
You get the Zac Efron question.
Yeah, you do.
Spoilers. Okay, well, Freddie B, good old Freddie B, asks via Facebook, question, how is it possible from Zac Efron's rehab stint to be kept out of the media, but we hear about so many other celebrities? Does he just have good people around him?
Okay, I'm going to have to make this quick because I know my sound engineer is going to go crazy if I take up too much more time. But for those of you not subscribing to the shrieking tweet section of the news, Zac Efron, he of the High School Musical fame, of the Hairspray movie, and perhaps a Star Wars movie because we just don't know, reportedly went to rehab at least once, perhaps twice, depending on which report you believe. We know that People is reporting the story, which means that it's more than likely true, and that the story is getting out there, likely with the blessing of Efron himself. So why didn't we hear about it before now, especially when we heard almost immediately that Lamar Odom was in rehab? I mean, for a day he was in rehab, but he was there, and we knew it. We also know whenever Lindsay Lohan's in rehab, we know when Britney Spears gets carted away on a 5150, but Efron, of all people, stays under the radar. So for this answer, I turn to Claire Weissman of the Weissman Method, a treatment program for addiction to opiates, and she told me some very intriguing facts. First of all, she has treated celebrities, and we're going to get to that blind item in a minute, but in essence, she says if a star doesn't want you to know he or she is in rehab, there really are ways to ensure that. Oftentimes, she'll have patients check in for treatment in the middle of the night to throw off paparazzi. She'll make sure that the star is alone when going in for treatment. She also says we'll put patients in their own suite with their own doors in and out. No one else ever even needs to see them go in, close quote. Also, she says, for the detox portion of the treatment, quote, other than the doctor and the nurse treating the patient, no one gets to know that patient is there, close quote. They may as well be frozen in carbonite. That's a shout out to my co-hosts. Now, unless the patient does something stupid, and now we come to our blind item. Here's a quote from Weissman. Quote, as much as stars say they want confidentiality, sometimes they may actually not. We had one patient come in with an entourage of 6, 7, 8 people, 10 pieces of luggage, even musical instruments, guitars, all for an expected 3-day stay. It was a rock musician. This is someone who we did everything in the world to keep the hospital visit secret, and they brought this entourage with all their cell phones. Close quote. Have fun guessing who it is. Meantime, we've reached the end of another podcast. Alex.
Aw.
Peter.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure.
Aw.
What are you sad? We could do it again whenever I want. I have that power.
It was so short.
Yeah, I'm sad we're at the end.
We're at about a half hour.
No.
Huh? Gee, that's fair enough. Yeah, right? So what? So how can they reach me first?
Well, you can reach the Fame Fatale via Twitter @FameFatale says.
Or you know what you can do? You can leave a comment on our blog at www.thefamefatale.com.
Or you can just find her on Facebook.
And how can you reach the Star Wars Minute?
Well, the easiest way is just go to www.starwarsminute.com, and that's your one-stop shopping.
Or we're also on Twitter at Star Wars Minute, or on Facebook, also Star Wars Minute.
If you guys love Star Wars and you love minutes, you gotta listen to their podcast. Thanks so much, everybody. This has been another edition of my show. We will talk to you next week.